So good morning and welcome. This is 40 Days and 40 Nights, the growing role of religions in the urgent fight for environmental sustainability. And we're thankful that all you could join us. And if those of you, if you in the back want to move up a little bit, you can do that. I'm Steve Ritchie from Utah Interfaith Power and Light. I'll tell you more about that in a moment. And we have with us Joan Gregory, Mark Thomas, and Elaine Emmy. And we'll be hearing from them in a few moments, too. What we thought we would do is a general plan of action, just so that you know. We thought we would take 15 or 20 minutes to look at a PowerPoint and kind of introduce you to Interfaith Power and Light. You know, a little bit more about us and a little bit more about what the whole thing is. And then each panelist will take about 5 minutes or less and talk about some specific areas. And then we're going to kind of go a little bit more free form with question and answer. And we will take some questions kind of invented from the description of today's session. And you'll have an opportunity to ask some questions yourself. And then finally, we'll wrap up with a music selection from our Sermon and Music Awards. This is something new for us, and we're pretty new ourselves. We've only been around about a year, but this is something that was started, that we started right around Earth Day, and other states have done it as well. And you'll hear more about the sermons part of the awards, and the music, you'll hear one of the selections at the end, so you can be looking forward to that. If anybody has trouble seeing the screen, let me know, and otherwise I'm going to move to the other microphone, and I'll tell you about Utah Interfaith Power and Light.
So you probably can't read. This works a little closer, so I can actually do two things at once. You probably can't read the regenerationproject.org at the top. That's our national organization. It started about 10 years ago. But it's still kind of informally called Interfaith Power and Light. And no, it's not a power company in the strictest sense. Though we have received a few calls to dispose of refrigerators, and we're glad that people are replacing their refrigerators with Energy Star and more efficient refrigerators of today. But it does deal with a very interesting thing, and that is the power of people, and people working together of different faiths. And it kind of grew out of the Salt Lake Interfaith Roundtable, who Elaine, I mean, behind me has been chair for a couple years. And we actually invited Sally Bingham, who you can't see her very well, but she's the one of the ones with the collar right in the middle of the Interfaith Power and Light at the bottom there. But we invited her to speak because she has recently been canonized, and she's an Episcopal priest who started Interfaith Power and Light. And you might see her every once in a while because she occasionally appears on CNN and other news stations concerning faith and the environment. You'll also note on the right our cool-looking logo, which is a compact fluorescent lamp with bees flying around it, so it looks like a beehive, and tying in with, you know, the symbol of industry in our state. And you'll also note our website as well. We started here in Salt Lake about a year ago, not quite. At this gathering, you'll recognize some of the people speaking, including myself, down at the Salt Lake City Library, where we welcome kind of as a little keynote person, Dave Sackerson, who is not only Episcopal priest, he's also mayor of Moab. So this is our main focus, and maybe the words climate change or global warming you're not so sure about, and I can judge because there's only a few of us here that that may be a general thought today, but nonetheless, we're about mobilizing religious response to climate change. Sally recognized before I did and a lot of others that we have a serious problem on our hands, and we'd all heard about this, but in recent years it has grown to the point of 4,000 communities of faith throughout the United States and even other countries. This shows a little bit about why we're so worried and why scientists are so worried. This is a shot from Alaska, and those are seals at the bottom, and you probably can't tell too well, but up here there are seals all over the place, and this glacier is Cabot. It's one of the many glaciers that are starting to shrink, and in fact, this glacier loses, during the summer, ice, a block of ice about the size of an average home every 20 minutes. And you can see that what looks like a cloud there from the ice having fallen off. And so things are much more pronounced with climate change in the very north, the polar regions, and the very south. And so this is something that we're not aware of here. And I'm going to go through this slide because I'm going to take it that most of you know about how climate change happens. But there's a couple things that I want to point out. And if anybody doesn't and would like to know more, please see me or one of the other members of Interfaith Power Light, and we can explain a little bit more. One of the key things that Sally Bingham brought to the table was she said that scientists are the prophets of our rapidly nearing future. But a couple things I'll point out. There's something that's really wrong with this slide, I think. You see that blue line around there? That implies that our atmosphere is pretty thick. And as we see it, and sometimes in the Salt Lake Valley, it's thicker than it should be. But at any rate, this implies that it's a very thick in proportion to the Earth. In fact, the atmosphere of the Earth is more like the skin of an apple, or the shell of an egg, or even thinner than that. Actually, the skin of an apple is probably better. And that is how it's possible for humans, through activity, through transportation industry, to alter it by increasing the level of carbon dioxide to the point that it was double already what it was 100, 200 years ago. And it's going to go even higher still. The other thing I'd like to point out about this slide is right here, this is... That is the North Polar Ice Cap. And in the last year or so, scientists have become much more alarmed because that will likely go ice-free in the next 10 to 20 years. Scientists originally thought it was maybe 30 years off. We, when we were in Alaska earlier in the summer, I actually thought somebody had said that it occurred already. It has not. It refreezes every year fully, but last year a channel developed such you could easily boat through the ice cap. And why global climate change is so serious is because this, many people feel, is a tipping point. Once this ice melts, then you have blue water which will absorb the sun's radiation and heat much more and accelerate the process. And that's an urgency that we kind of feel. Okay. You probably recognize this. This was a turning point for me personally. This is Katrina. And you can't look at a single weather event and say that's climate change. But in 2005, you know, there were about 27 or 28 major tropical storms in the Caribbean. We ran out of letters of the alphabet. And we can be glad that hasn't happened again, but can we stop it? Probably not. And the question I put to you is, who is affected mostly by this? And we know from, you know, what we learned in the media and what is still going on. In fact, I know of a group from a church in Ohio who recently sent challenged youth from the inner city down to New Orleans to help, and there's still a lot to be done with that. And so it's people, you know, at the lesser end of the scale that really will suffer the most from climate change. And that's why people of faith are concerned about it. Almost all the religions and all major beliefs talk about love of neighbor. And the question that we identify this is, who are our neighbors? Are they in distant lands? Are they furred and feathered? And also importantly, are they future generations? In other words, are our great-grandchildren, who will be likely very affected? I'm going to take a late chat real quickly with it. This just shows you historically what's happened. 1963, a lot of water, the Lake Chad. And then shrinking, going, it's probably gone right now. And this is another indication of how people less equipped to deal with climate change are affected, because does anybody know what country in sub-Saharan Africa is right to the east or to the right as we would look at the globe of Chad? Well, it's Sudan. And more specifically, it's the Darfur region of Sudan. And most of the 3 million people that have been displaced from Sudan are now in Chad. And the people who are displaced from Sudan are farmers. And farmers need water from Lake Chad. And so you can see where we all get kind of interconnected. That's why people of faith are starting to respond, you know, in this way. We've aided social change in the past. Some of the things, abolition of slavery, civil rights, even the women's right to vote, and even most recently the Endangered Species Act. that people of faith can do this again. And in Utah, one of the things that we're hoping is that many people of faith can get on board and start realizing how serious this is. One of the things that Utah Interfaith Parliament does is education, outreach, and action. And actually, the target is that there are 150 million people of faith in the United States. And so you can see there's a big resource there for making personal changes and for mobilizing change. We have our website on there, and one of the things that we really promote is efficiency, because this allows us to reduce our carbon footprint now, as well as promoting renewable energy, which will save the planet in the years to come. This is a little bit about energy efficiency. One of the services we offer is that we will come to your faith community and do an energy audit. And that's a kind of a nice service. It's an informal audit, and we suggest a professional audit every 2 or 3 years anyway. But it's amazing the amount of money that can be saved. You can see that short line there. Change the light, change the world. I don't know how many of you have this, but most of you have compact fluorescent lamps that you see on the right there. That's our logo. We have a pledge program, and this is already and will save hundreds of thousands of dollars for those member faith communities and the people that have taken the step of replacing incandescent bulbs with compact fluorescents, which we're going to have to do, and that's a good reason why it's a lot. Something that's great in the Salt Lake Valley and a lot of Utah is something called Blue Sky, which if you're not a part of, we encourage, because it's a way to have wind and solar renewable energy right now is mostly from the wind. Okay, faith communities in action. We're going to just take a look at a couple different faith communities across the country. And as I said, it's been international now, both New Zealand and Sweden, using renewable energy and taking responsible energy policies to protect our earth. This is a synagogue in California, and they've taken a big step. And it's important to realize that you can't go to light speed or very easily anyway, unless your pocket's kind of deep in terms of putting solar panels on. But nonetheless, in the West, they found that in 18 months they could raise funds. The confirmation class even got on board. And the end result is a 10,000-watt photovoltaic array, which will meet 25% of their energy demands. And we've actually heard rumors in Interfaith Power and Light that this is something that the LDS Church is considering across the board. In other words, every LDS building throughout the world, at least where it's appropriate in the western United States and other parts, might someday have a solar panel on it. And this is really exciting and something we're, you know, is very much needed. And this, the problem is that it's got a little bit of a price tag at the beginning, but the long-term advantage is huge. Then we go to the other end of the country, to Maine, where they actually do generate electricity, or Massachusetts, where they just installed a new boiler for heat. And they found the savings was $17,000. And that's one of the real attracting things of Interfaith Power and Light, is that we almost all the time will come in and save a faith community money, sometimes a significant amount of money, by just making some simple improvements. Sometimes you don't have to put a boiler in, but sometimes just turning down, turning the temperature up a little bit, replacing some of the lighting, changing some of the timing, it's amazing the energy that you can save. This translates into funds that are available for other use. Or, as they did here, they use 14% of the savings to buy 100% renewable building. So All Saints Episcopal of Massachusetts are able to fund completely, you know, their electricity with renewable sources. So not generating any carbon dioxide that causes climate change. This is who we are here, at least as of December 2007. You may recognize some of the different names. You're going to hear some of them, you know, from some of the people today, such as Elaine from the Salt Lake Quakers, you know, or Joan from First Unitarian Church of Salt Lake City. But it's important to know that that's a pretty good list. You might notice the congregation of Kol Ami, which is one of our largest Jewish communities of faith, is on board with this. So one thing that's very serious about this is that that's 9, and there are 2,000 faith communities in Utah. And we're so glad to be able to be here and share this, you know, need for more faith communities to get on board. The LDS Church is controlled centrally. You may know that better than myself, but nonetheless, That's one of the questions we might look at a little bit later in our discussions. But to really have an effect in Utah, the LDS Church has to be on board. And we've had good discussions, and some great things have happened already. And we'll hear a little more about that in a few minutes. These are just some of our goals for 2008. Increase the number of faith communities, membership in Utah Interfaith Power Alliance. We already have a resource library of books and films. And Dale Ann, if you would stand up. She is good contact in terms of the resources to be able to, if you'd like to take a look at a film or a book or whatever, we have this library in place. There's some talk about being able to get some space at the Salt Lake City Library. But we'd like to be able to share it not only throughout the Salt Lake Valley, but throughout the entire Utah state. The curriculum part we're still working on, and the pledge, which I mentioned earlier, we're still working on that, but we're making pretty good progress on that. I'll just kind of briefly go through this. This is some of the work that's happening here already. And Joan Greger may speak a little bit more to this, but First Unitarian Church in Salt Lake has had a monthly lecture series featuring various leaders of the community and in the environment. They've done Earth Institute discussion courses, and they've participated in the Blue Sky. Earth-focused sermons, envisioning the future, and right now they're considering a great program of they're working with an energy LEED certified, and I'll tell you a little more about that, architects in terms of redesigning their historic building to make it energy efficient and to make it friendly to the earth and reducing the amount of carbon dioxide, particularly in terms of heating. So they are the first church to become a Salt Lake City E2 business. I mentioned the word LEED. And Lane Emmy will tell you in a few minutes a little bit more about exciting news about the new City Creek Center downtown, that's going to be a LEED certified building. But in the meantime, I thought since I'm already at the microphone, if you have break time or just whenever it's convenient, just two or three blocks away from this building, if you would like to see what a LEED certified gold building, and LEED stands for Leadership and Environment and Energy Design. But Larry H. Miller, in their Toyota location...
Mark Miller,
thank you very much. I'd be in trouble. I don't have the slide up there. At any rate, Mark Miller on West Temple, a little bit south of here, around 700, 800 south. You can go into this building. It's gold certified. It uses passive solar heating. It collects rainwater in the cisterns. They use that to wash cars with. They probably rinse them off finally with regular water, I'm sure. But at any rate, there are all sorts of things they've done. The paneling is outside is recycled aluminum. The walls inside are bamboo. Bamboo trees grow in six years. So this is what an E2 business can do in Salt Lake. And it's important to realize that this business is on board. And so it's time for faith communities too. This is another church, Holiday United Church of Christ. Four more whole earth services per year, a covenant which calls for lifestyle changes by its entire membership, which was voted, I understand, almost unanimously. During the Christmas Advent season, compact fluorescent lamps were sold to raise awareness and raise funds for 15% blue sky energy. And in fact, right now, there is a goal program for 25 to 30% of the congregation to be enrolled in the blue sky program. Energy audits, passive solar heating. So, it turns back to us what we can do to reduce our carbon footprint. The first step, and it's only a beginning, is the compact fluorescent lamps. But conserving, reducing energy loss, saves dollars, and raises awareness for action. Okay, there's our footprint in Utah. It's kind of big. Also Germany and the United States. And you see how much smaller the footprint is Germany. They use about half the energy per person than we do. In fact, if we lived in Ethiopia, we would use, averaged out, we would use 1/395th the amount of energy that we use as an average as opposed to the United States. So that's why it's important in terms of sharing the world's resources. It's not right for us to hog it all. So it's up to us to decide where we're going to go from here. I'm going to leave this slide up here, and at some point I'm going to change it to a quote. But at this point, what I'm going to do is just kind of step away from this microphone and introduce our panelists a little bit more, and we'll continue on.
You could be thinking about questions, too, you might have.
Okay, Elaine, you're closest to me. Would you like to go first?
Sure.
Okay, this is Elaine Emmy of the Salt Lake Quakers, and she also is chair for the past couple years of the Salt Lake Interfaith Roundtable.
Glad everybody's here today, and glad it's raining. I realized that in July we got a quarter of an inch of rain. I was listening to a wrap-up on the news about the weather for the month of July. And it's hard to sustain a whole city on a quarter of an inch of rain in 1 month. I think one of the things that came to me as I moved to Salt Lake in 1983, it was such a beautiful place, and I was a refugee from the Los Angeles area, and one of the reasons I left L.A. was smog. And our son grew up learning that when the smog monster was out, he had to play indoors. So, and when we first got here, it was great, and we didn't have so much smog. And now when I drive into work in the morning, I look over this thick black layer as I drive into the city. And as Steve talked about the atmosphere, I think about what that is doing to the whole sort of photochemical process. So, just being in Salt Lake makes you aware, I think, of the issues that are facing all humans, all living things on Earth. Another thing that I found interesting when I was a lot younger, I went on a big religion search, and I tried everything, which was a lot of fun, and I think that's why I sort of got involved in interfaith work down the road. But my dad and I used to talk about how we'd love to start an environmental religion, that we felt like religion had lost its footing, that it was not taking into account creation, and that God had created this wonderful universe and earth, and humans were living here as if there were no ants or butterflies or mountains. They'd tear down the mountains and trample on the ants and spray the butterflies out of existence. So we had that discussion many times, but as I discovered Quakers and started doing a lot of more in-depth study, I also found that every religion had an environmental component. It had just sort of ignored it, pushed it aside. And one of the fun things that we all have been doing with the Utah Interfaith Power and Light, when we've had discussions, we've often had people talk from their particular religious perspective. And we had an imam speak from the Khadija Mosque in January at the University of Utah. And it was fascinating. He said, I really had to prepare for this because this isn't anything that I had been thinking about. And so he went into the Quran in depth, and he found all these passages that relate to the sense of taking care of the earth and really being part of the earth. So that's one of the fun parts for us, I think, is exploring, finding what it is in our faiths that has a connection to taking care of the earth. What Steve had mentioned earlier that was sort of exciting news, and you may have caught it, that was kind of a small article in the Deseret News, and I don't think there was enough accolades given. The LDS Church announced that the City Creek Center would be a green center and that they were going to make it LEED certified, and I think their goal is silver certification, which is very, very hard to get. Gold is almost impossible, and there are probably just literally a handful of buildings in the whole U.S. that are gold certified. And what's interesting is that when the Interfaith Roundtable started, some of you know, but some may not know, it was actually started prior to the Olympics, and it was part of the Olympic movement. And it was so that when the world came here, they saw that there wasn't just one faith, that there were many faiths. And after the Olympics were finished, we enjoyed being together so much that we decided that we wanted to continue on. So we created the Salt Lake Interfaith Roundtable. And a lot of concerns have come up, and one of the big concerns in the roundtable has been environmental concerns. So when we had an opportunity to have Sally Bingham come, we actually had the largest attendance of any interfaith roundtable meeting when she spoke to us. And one of the questions we ask our LDS representatives were, how can we, if we are to move into an interfaith power and light group, how can we keep you involved? And it was very clear. They said, we can't be political. And a lot of the, if you go to our national website, the IPL website, you'll see that many states are quite political. And so it was interesting to kind of take a different direction. And we have really stressed for us, maybe you might say, a more spiritual dimension of this search and what it means to different faith communities. And also nuts and bolts approach. What can we do? You know, as Quakers, we have our very first Quaker meeting house in Utah that we got in 2005. It's a 100-year-old building, and it was kind of a wreck, you know. But we were glad to have our own dump, even if it is a dump. And one of the first things we did was an audit of the building in terms of how can we make this more energy efficient. And it was interesting because we actually had the lowest energy usage of almost any sort of public building in the Murray area. So we determined that we couldn't really do a lot except that we had this cranky old refrigerator that we're aiming to replace. And it was kind of interesting to find that that was our energy hog. And so we have all these dreams of doing solar panels and super insulation and all these things, but our first goal is to replace the refrigerator. And had we not done an audit, we wouldn't have known that at all. It just hadn't occurred to any of us. I think the refrigerator is about as old as the building. So the approach that we have taken with different folks has been to really have this awareness dialogue to help people understand what they can do within their own faith community. And in talks with different LDS folks, we've really enjoyed their concern. And so I keep hoping, like Steve said, that there'll be interesting things that will happen in the future. And the dialoguing has really become the most important thing. And we found this both with talking about the energy-related issues and wilderness issues and a lot of sort of what you might call care for creation. So I'll stop there and let Mark or whoever want. We're losing
our sunshine a little bit.
Yes.
Go ahead, Mark. You can get set while we do this. I don't think this will take too long.
Oops. No, it's okay. You don't have to tie it. I'm just going to...
Just going to tape it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you're taping it. Oh, there we go.
Voila.
Yeah.
In a new recent New Yorker article, tail end knows I love the New Yorker. There was a story of a fire in 1949. I believe it was in Wyoming. The firefighters were preparing with their axes and their other equipment to go up to the fire. It was a small fire. They were going to put it out quickly. By the time they got there and they jumped out and were on the ground, the fire had grown far beyond their expectations. It was 500 feet high, and it was moving faster than they could run. So they immediately realized the peril of their situation. They were all running frantically to the ridge to try to get out of this fire. One of the firefighters stopped. He realized that they were going to be killed. So he stopped in his place and said, "What can I do here?" And he thought and said, "The only thing I can do is burn the grass around me. As, you know, so the fire will go around me." He tried to stop his fellow firefighters, but they were too panic-stricken. They kept running. So it was his just stopping and doing nothing and realizing that he couldn't beat this. It caused him to come up with this idea. He burned the fire around him. He ducked to the ground. The fire went around him. And he was the only one that survived. This article was really by a Northwestern University scientist that was trying to demonstrate the power of creativity. That you need to stop and not focus and kind of do nothing for a minute. And your own creative powers will solve the problem. And then suddenly...
Suddenly the banner fell.
The banner fell. As Steve mentioned, scientists are in an unusual position of yelling fire. And the remarkable thing about it is that they seem to be discovering that the situation is far worse than they thought. Scientists are not in the position to be doing this, but they are talking about massive areas becoming desert where nothing lives. They're talking about cities, water enveloping cities, possibly by in a century Florida being underwater. This sounds like the crazy people we used to see with placards that the world's coming to an end. The sky's falling, yeah, Chicken Little. And scientists find themselves in the unusual position of saying it's really worse than we thought. So the question is, who is going to stop and burn the fire around them? There will be people that won't do anything. And the question, let us not understate it, is survival for us and for most of life on Earth. Now, in this fight for survival, religion will play a part. By doing nothing, it will play a part. But there are religious leaders that are moving forward, and so I'm of the LDS faith. I grew up, I have pioneers in my ancestry. I went on an LDS mission to Brazil. And I teach business. So how do I put, as a strategy, back to the fire analogy, how do I put the LDS Church in this grand scheme of things? I would call them, number one, pragmatic. They're not going to do anything that is outlandish and foolish. On the other hand, they're very cautious, conservative, wary of getting involved in political discussions. I would call them their lagging indicators of what's going to happen. There are other groups. Scientists are the leading indicators. In this case, the LDS Church is a lagging indicator. And if it wishes to survive, it will change. And that's what's at stake for the LDS Church and for each of our faith communities. In effect, it's survival. And so I have no doubt. And so we're looking at a lagging indicator. I know I've spoke with an architect that works at church headquarters in the building committee. He talks about solar panels as if they were like aliens from outer space. Yet you talk with an energy person in that same department, and he says, we're going to have to do this. You see the rumblings already starting. You see the deans of BYU, a business school, the dean of the Utah State University, who went to the presiding bishop and said, we need to consider renewable energy in every church building. And the presiding bishop wringing their hands and saying, come back in 2009. We'll talk to you then. Now, that's a sea change. The LDS Church has a theology. One would call it maybe animistic of its early radical beginnings, a theology perfectly set for environmental compatibility and support. But in its current state, it's concerned with business management that one would call the 1960s management, the kind of thing that Ford and GM did. How can we cut costs? How can we be more efficient? These are sacred funds. We need to take care of them. They're not in the mode of thinking Toyota is going to kill you. they're not quite realizing that in pragmatic terms, in terms of their own survival, that there's a tidal wave coming. But City Creek is an indication. The fact that the people inside the church beginning to... So if I were just simply an economist or a market strategist, I would say this is an indicator that enormous things are about to happen. Let me give you another sample that I think... These things may be small, and the fact that we have a small group here, I think, is indicative. But there are people here, that we have a session from a variety of religions. Someday people will look back and on the environmental movement, what saved Utah? You know, there was a session back at Sunstone. I wonder what they did there. I have no doubt that that will happen. So thank you for your concern. The LDS Church is a prophetic religion, but it's a conservative religion. But one thing it will not do is shoot itself in the foot. So I have a notion that in the next few years, you're going to see some surprises. And the leading indicators are already there. It's time to move to groups like the LDS Church, kind of mainstream, cautious, conservative. And one example of this, I'm working with the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. Brian Minch, a high school friend of mine, is the physician that's the head of the group. Several years ago when this was founded, said, we are going to go out and tell everyone, no more coal power plants. We don't want any of them built. I talked to a very sage political advisor and said, you know, that's just ridiculous. Nobody's going to buy that. And yet, Rocky Mountain Power has said, no more fire power. Warren Buffett, we're not going to do any more coal power plants because of for a variety of reasons. That's stunning. Within almost a year, we have a sea change of thought going on, even by the business community involved. And I think what we need to do is simply stop and look around us. Talk. Talk to your bishop. You know, if you're LDS, talk to your people. The dead have enormous power. The people in this world that in a certain sense are still alive speak to us because of a word spoken here and a thought there. We can't predict the impact we're going to have. And with a small effort in the middle of the flame that seems it may destroy us, we may save ourselves. In fact, I think we will. And no one can predict whose word or whose thought or whose message will have that impact. Once the LDS Church, I think, is involved, it will change the market. They're building enough that the cost of solar power is going to go down. I've heard, and I don't know if it's true, that the second next to the federal government build more buildings than anybody else in the United States except the federal government. If they were to be serious about solar energy, that market would change. Prices would come down. People in this state will all of a sudden, and I say will look seriously at these kinds of energy kinds of things. So what do I have to say to you? I have to say to you, thank goodness. The lagging indicators are starting to show up. And that's a sign that maybe, just maybe, there's hope for us. Thank you.
And before Joan goes up, I wanted to add to what Mark said about our Warren Buffett-owned power company. Southern California, where most of the power that's generated in Utah goes, wrote to Warren Buffett and the Utah Power Commission and said, we don't want power that is from coal-fired plants. And that came about from the Interfaith Power and Light folks in California. So, never, what is it that Margaret Mead, I love this quote, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. And I love that. And the impact of one or a small group.
I'm way down here. I'm Joan Gregory. I'm from First Unitarian Church. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about the power of one, the power of the individual in all of this. And sometimes, you know, climate change seems like an insurmountable problem that we can't do anything about. And there are lots of stories that probably stories that maybe we can talk about from your perspective as well after we're done with the panel, hearing some of your stories about the things that you have done that have made a change. I did want to tell you that from the Unitarian Church perspective, we have what's called our seventh principle. We have seven principles, and the seventh one is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And that is the focus for all of our environmental ministry work. And I am the coordinator of environmental ministry at First Unitarian Church, but I was not always the coordinator of environmental ministry at First Unitarian Church. Back, maybe some of you remember, in the early 90s, KUED, KUER, and the University of Utah had a big gathering there and invited the Earth Institute from Portland, Oregon, here to Salt Lake. And they began offering courses called the Earth Institute Discussion Courses. And several people from our congregation attended those courses. And the courses cover a number of different topics, but at the time, voluntary simplicity and choices for sustainable living were the two courses that were the newest ones available. And those were offered at our church. Well, I had very young children at the time, and I couldn't take those courses with a large group of people without disrupting the course. So I gathered my family together and said, how about if we do it at home? And so we did, and we started doing that. And those courses absolutely changed our lives and changed the way we looked at the earth and our impact on the earth. And from there, I took then those courses and started coordinating those courses at our church, at First Unitarian. And the courses are general courses. They're discussion courses. You can read and then discuss with other people. And I think that's one of the things that we've lost in our society. But actually, I think a lot of the LDS communities actually do much better in that area of bringing their congregations together in smaller groups and having chances to talk. And so talking about the environment and our impact on the environment was a big part of the changes in my life that led to eventually coordinating environmental ministry at our church. And we did these courses. Then I went on to offer courses at our church, and from those courses in our church went on to trying to encourage things like recycling in our church community and washing our dishes and having our non-disposable cups and plates and glasses accessible, and just moving on little steps one at a time, changing our water heater, etc. And then I went into coordinating our environmental ministry. And from there, we started this year a process where we were re-envisioning our whole footprint, our whole facility, and trying to determine if we needed to get bigger or smaller, or grow or expand in different ways, split off and have other congregations. And we decided to build on the site that we are on. And in all of our focus groups, one of the things that came out was that people really wanted to be an environmentally friendly building and an environmentally focused congregation. And we decided to go for LEED certification with our building and our process. And we are seeking to build an environmentally friendly facility, add on to our facility in an environmentally friendly way. So from hearing about those courses at the University of Utah, to taking them to my church, to making small changes like recycling, to coordinating environmental ministry, to changing the whole facility of our church, I think that we many times think, I can't do anything. I can't change anything. But we each have the power inside of ourselves to make changes. And one change leads to another. It's like that pebble in the pond. And those changes ripple, and more people see those changes and the changes that you're making, perhaps in your ward. Other wards see it. They move on, make changes in theirs. And then when the leadership of your church then says, we're thinking of doing something environmentally focused, the people are there to support the leadership of the church as well. And give them, because you know what? They need that power and centeredness as well. Because they're just one person or 12 people or more than that. And they need to know that the people of Salt Lake, the people of the LDS Church, the Church of Christ, or the Episcopal Church are supporting them in those efforts towards focusing on creation again. Thank you.
I said I would change the frame. And here's a little quote that you can ponder about as we, I think we'll go right to kind of a question and answer time period, because I'm sure that a few of you have questions about, you know, this whole process, about interfaith power and light, and we may be able to even add more. But yeah, take a look at this quote for a moment. Okay, I don't know if you've been thinking about any questions, but if you do, we have the microphone up front here, which I can reposition and turn around, because our session is being recorded, so don't hesitate to be shy if questions come to mind. You can be first.
Okay. I'm Ramana Anand. I'm a member of the Saltwater Unitarian Universalist Church, also known as the First Unitarian Church of Seattle. I'm also a process theologian. Process theology is very ecologically minded, but I tend to increase the scope throughout geologic time into the geologic, far geologic future. Things are going to happen that are going to take a lot of work for us to help mitigate. I just want to talk about one minor paragraph I read, which I thought was interesting. It said that as the ice caps melt, we're already maintaining the sea levels by conserving more water and holding more water on land. What do we see in the news? We see dry stories about dry areas. Then we see the Midwest. They have more water than they need. And I was wondering, based on this article was implying, that maybe we need a Apollo program type water management system to capture the water, and so that we don't have floods and people who can use the water can get it.
Yes, thank you for your comments. I don't know if anybody would like to address that. I could say a few words. First of all, in Utah here, there is an organization known as WaterWise Utah. And I would encourage you to get in touch with them. Lisa Coney is a member of the Kolomi community of faith, and she also kind of heads this up and worked with us actually a year ago when we started at the Salt Lake City Library. But water is a serious part of the equation. And one of the things that global climate change does is cause very erratic patterns, meaning that there will be an excess of water Joseph Smith spent a little bit of time in Kirtland, Ohio. And a year ago, very close to Kirtland, Ohio, just about 5 miles to the north of it, in an hour's time period, 7 or 8 inches of water fell in rain. And this is just a good example of some of the extremes that we can see as things change. And then meanwhile, you have things drying up in Chad, you have things drying up here, we have increased wildfires. And so it is important to recognize that it's all interconnected. And yet we sometimes don't think that what car we choose to drive or how fast we even drive or how often we drive gets tied into that equation, but in fact it does. Other questions? Yes, please.
I'm interested in the comment that was made about the LDS Church not wanting to get involved in political issues, particularly in light of the marriage amendment crusade in California at the moment. And I'm wondering if that is because they see the one as a moral issue and not the other, or they just see gay marriage as a greater threat than rising sea levels. I don't know, but I'm just wondering if the way that they're sort of carrying on their marriage amendment campaign through proxy organizations like protectmarriage.com, if maybe that's an approach that they might consider taking on environmental issues, or if there's a way around sort of the prescription against involvement in politics in this case.
Oh, Elaine's got a comment. I was going to turn it over to Mark. So.
Okay, I'm going to just say what little I know and then let Mark say. I think, one, the whole interfaith effort with the LDS Church is new. And so part of it is they're sort of feeling their way through that process and how do they fit into that process. And I think also it was... And I think it's been good for us. It's more of a sense of being proactive in different ways rather than being against something. And I know it's, as an environmentalist, it's one of the things I actually dislike. I don't like the model of fighting something after the fact. I would rather be proactive and create a new way. And so I think that's part of it, this sort of a sense of networking has developed within the LDS Church reaching out to other faith communities. And so part of it is, I think they're just learning how to be part of the whole interfaith movement. I think in some respects, there are so many other organizations who are doing the political work. There are many groups who are making that political statement, we don't need to do that again. And so it's forced us to be more creative in the way that we look at the issues in Utah. And this networking is so important. And I think, to me, it's phenomenal that the LDS Church just made that step to make Cedar Creek a green building. And another example for us as Quakers, Quakers have the oldest religious lobby in the United States. And their building was literally falling apart. Each employee had either an umbrella or a hard hat at their desk. That's how bad the building was. And when they knew that they would literally have to rebuild and almost start from bare bones, those historic buildings, so they had to preserve the integrity of the building, I asked them as they started the campaign, I said, have you considered making it a LEED certified building? Because the statement it would make in Washington, D.C. would be phenomenal. And they said, well, no, we hadn't, but we'll talk to our architect, who happened to be a woman, and said, oh, we can do that. And they discovered that it really wouldn't cost that much more to do. And it's been unbelievable. Without officially making political statements, the building has made those political statements. And I think the same thing is going to happen for the LDS Church, that they're going to actually make political statements through that building. And that those changes will come about in that sort of internal way, that you, as part of people who are LDS and who walk into that building, it's going to change them. And so I think both Mark and Steve had said it too, that the process is already happening. It's how it'll happen, it's hard to know. And then why do they pick certain things that they want to be political? Who knows? So.
The California issue surprised me, that the church came out publicly, because they've been fighting this behind the scenes for quite some time. And that they would come out and actually make a political statement. And it's quite clear that they see this as kind of a drawing, a line in the sand. And it's clearly marriage, defending marriage, as the church defines it. I'll just say one thing that surprised. Another thing that surprised me is President Samuelson. Before he was president of BYU, was in charge of this group, this kind of quiet group that was actually getting other community groups to fight homosexual marriage in California. And this was all behind the scenes. One businessman down there that I know well was on this committee, and they were assigning, you go to the Boy Scouts, you go to the different groups, and let's see if we can fight gay marriage. And they all gave assignments out. And this person said to me that, I don't know if he wants his name disclosed, but this was all supposed to be behind the scenes. But they asked President Samuelson, a general authority and now president of BYU, what's his assignment? And he said, my assignment is to protect the gays and lesbians. And he was quite shocked by that. I mean, here's the thing, to try to stop their marrying, but he didn't want this to turn into some kind of a hate or vindictive thing. I don't know what that means, but that whole process is troubling to me. But on the other hand, the comment was surprising, that they didn't want people hurt. A second thing about political issues. Clearly, the LDS Church does not see environmental issues as being anything but political right now. And not religious, so I don't think the connection's been made. It's going to take a while to make that connection. When it does, and it will happen, then we've seen maybe, I think that this is maybe a precursor of what will happen with environmental issues. I think the church is going to jump in. I think within the next decade we will have sermons in conference on environmental issues. I have no doubt about that. But just like they've been fighting behind the scenes this political battle that has a moral component they consider strong enough that they're willing to come out for, that same thing is going to happen. And so I see this as kind of a prophetic forewarning of what's going to happen on environmental issues.
Sorry. It's all right. Go ahead, Dana.
I'm Dana Dolson, and I happen to be fortunate enough to know fellow member of the LDS Church who lives in Spokane, and had her parents send me this book, which was of a conference that was held at BYU not more than 3 years ago, I believe. And the editors being George Handley, Terry Ball, and Stephen Peck. And its title is Stewardship and the Creation, LDS Perspectives on the Environment. So they are certainly aware of the issue and seems to be in the thoughts of some. I don't know how many.
Thanks, Dana. Is it okay if we pass that book around? People might be interested to take a look at it. I will mention, too, that George Handley is a part of Utah Interfaith Power and Light. In fact, he wrote the Spanish-speaking page on our website, utahipl.org. And it's he also spoke at the Focus the Nation, where the imam that Elaine referenced, Mohammed Shoaibi, also spoke and kind of summed it up in one point by the word greed. And so it's really interesting to think in that light. Just a couple quick comments about politics. Actually, I kind of hold Al Gore responsible for this, and it's not that I want to say anything negative about Al Gore, but because he is a politician, because he was vice president and almost president, I think climate change has a political connection. It's a challenge for us in Utah Interfaith Power and Light, because the national organization expects us to be political.
And even though Dale Ann Peterson and myself spent a little time at the National Conference in Washington, D.C., we worked hard to kind of reinforce that with a national organization. And the result is that good people do good things, and the best example of that is what's happening with City Creek. And so it is worth it, and we work hard to try and stay out of that. But nonetheless, it is the laws that will eventually set, you know, the rules that we need. And, you know, so it's something that we're quite aware of. And you can be aware of, too, that this situation is serious enough that we're hoping sooner or later that the LDS Church and its leadership will recognize that a political aspect of this is important in order to get the change that we need in place. This is a good point to kind of refocus this a little bit on the topic of the session. Oh, we've got one more. Okay, great. Yes, please.
Russell Shipley from the Community of Christ. We got a series of DVDs from the teaching company. It's a Dr. Wolfson who puts on the information. He's a physicist. They're a series of 12 DVDs. Each one is a 30-minute presentation, and they're entitled The Earth's Changing Climate. This isn't necessarily for everybody. It's college-level course material, but he goes into very specifically details of how they are measuring and have come up with the idea that the climate is changing. And so it's just very detailed. It's very good. The Earth's Changing Climate. He's got a book that goes along with it, and he does identify right from the very beginning that this is dated material. As soon as it got published, it needs updating. And so they have a website that you can go to and get more current information. And our current, the president of our church, in the last, what we interpret as an inspired document to the church, did present some issues to the church regarding the environment. And I just thought it was interesting, some of the terminology he used was saying that the earth groans. And I just thought that was interesting terminology, that the earth groans because of what we humans are doing to it. And he's calling us to be better stewards over what we are given and what we are doing to the environment. So starting to invite people to come along, to move in the direction, to do some things.
Go ahead. Sure, go ahead.
I'm Charles with the music. My wife Nancy and I came down today at the invitation of Mark Thomas, and we're delighted that he did, because I think we're an example of what you're talking about, to try to work with people at the ground grassroots level. And we got involved because you all had a contest for music concerns. And being the environmentalists that both of us are, we try to encourage those around us to be. Nancy wrote a song, which we'll do shortly. But I wanted to say to you, I think that we need to work at the political level, but we also need to work at the grassroots level and take people like us now, who can go back to our Methodist church up in Ogden, which is quite environmentally friendly. We just built a new church, and I wish this had happened last year so that we could have influenced the church building. But we are going to go back and see, and maybe have one of these audits of our new building and see what we can do there. I would like to just take the last moment and just mention hope. All of us, of course, are concerned, angry, whatever, about the whole environmental, the energy crisis right now. But I'm starting to look at it as maybe this is a blessing in disguise. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, we started this before, and then we dropped off in the 70s. We had our moments in the 80s. But I think right now this is an opportune time to mobilize the average citizen. And I think we're going to see a lot of changes as far as trying to get environmentally friendly policies, alternative energy. And so the same time that I'm concerned, I'm also encouraged that we might be, as you said, on the foreground now of really breaking through and getting the message through that we have to protect the server. Thank you for this.
Yeah.
Glad we're here.
Thank you. One thing else that I'll mention, I've seen some of the teaching company courses, and they are very good, but one of the things that we do offer is a little bit of a speaker's bureau where we will come and speak on a variety of different topics. You'll also note from your handout there's a number of books and films, and educating one further is of grave importance in this because the situation is so serious. In addition, we have an association with Dr. David Chapman, who is a climate physicist at the University of Utah, and he has spoken at one of our events at one of the faith communities, part of Interfaith Power and Light, to about 60 or 70 people, and people found it, you know, very helpful to get the latest updates on, you know, the science behind things. This is a good opportunity before we kind of wrap up, and I'll tell you briefly about the sermons and the music awards. But before we do that, it's a good opportunity to refocus a little bit on the topic of today's session. Mark Thomas, we thank you for putting together the great written word that was in the Sunstone Guide. And if you notice, there's words like urgent fight for environmental sustainability. And it's nice that Dana stood up a few moments ago, and he might have a comment or two, because he's actually part of the Utah conservation biologists. And while he's thinking about that, just on the topic of urgency, because sometimes, you know, weather changes and we get this uncertainty, it's important to recognize that scientists are uniform when you get them in a group and they are within their specialty, as did the United Nations with 1,400 scientists. But another thing that struck me on the topic of today's session about creation, and we haven't spent a lot of time talking about God's creation and, you know, at the personal level, but the Stanford scientist that's in the Sunstone, you know, symposium brochure is with the large number of others, and I've read some research studies that indicate that within the next 30 or 40 years, 1 million species will go extinct. And so if you wonder if this is an exaggeration, and we don't realize sometimes that a lot of our healthcare products now come from unusual species. And if 1 million species go extinct, there will be species, part of God's creation, that we will never know. Maybe this will be helpful sometimes when talking with people, because sometimes people want to reduce carbon taxes and Lieberman Warner and these sort of things to dollars and cents. But we're talking about playing with creation here, and so it's really worth it to consider that. Dana, do you have any comments on that?
I feel bad when I can't see everybody all the time.
You can, yeah, switch around the other left. We'll look at your shoulders.
I do volunteer on behalf of the Society for Conservation Biology, which is an international, all around the world organization of biologists. And I am currently serving as the Outreach Committee Chair of the Religions and Conservation Biology Working Group, which is an entity therein. As the Outreach Committee Chairperson of the Religions and Conservation Biology Working Group, of their outreach effort, we are trying to support initiatives such as this one today so that we will build bridges of information and increased understanding for the members of our own organization, but then the religious communities that are engaging with us, to enhance the relationships between us, between religions, around conservation biology and biodiversity, and represent, hopefully, the objectives of what the Society for Conservation Biology represents to both religion and theology contexts. I'm briefly just going to mention here the mission of the organization, of the Outreach Committee, is to bridge religion and conservation biology through the provision of education and communication outreach program activities, events, and publications to religious communities and the Religions and Conservation Biology Working Group, as well as to our broader organization and the international conservation community at large. So if there is a way that we can assist through the Society for Conservation Biology with Utah Interfaith Power and Light, as well as throughout the nation and the world, we'd certainly like to hear from you, and I thank you for your time.
Oh. I just have one more thing to add. Did anyone do an email?
No, we haven't.
Oh, I'm just going to pass around my notebook here, and if you'd like to be on our mailing list, just for emails, put your email address on here, and we don't share your email. We may send out a calendar maybe one or two times a month if we have a lot going on. And okay, and sure, we've got some bookmarks too with our website.
We still have about 15 minutes left, but I don't think we'll use all that time because what, unless you have a question that's burning?
Did you have a question?
Oh, yes, please. Yes, there's time, so. Yes, yes.
My name is Holly Brown, and I'm from California, and there's I'm a realtor there, and so there's now this, I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's the eco-brokers. And it's becoming very, very popular among the realtors. I'm also LDS, and so I don't know if they have it here. I know it's all over, but it's a great, great thing to get everybody educated and make sure everyone can find out what we can do for our homes and environment and our communities and such. So just want to let you know if anybody can
Thank you. Well, also part of our topic was the sermons and music awards, and so I think we didn't quite cover that, so I'm going to cover that very briefly in a couple minutes, and then we have a music selection that you'll be able to hear. For those of you who were present yesterday morning at 8 o'clock, we had a nice group of about 60, where we shared three different messages from different faith leaders within the state. And George Hanley was one of them, and that we read several pages from his fireside chat, that as he termed it to us, on thinking about the environment and, LDS teachings. At any rate, you will have an opportunity in the next couple weeks to see some of these sermons and likely be able to download a music composition as well, such as the one Nancy and Mark and I are going to share with you in a few moments that Nancy has written. But what this is, was we instituted this just before Earth Day, in 2008, and we extended it through the summer, and it still runs another week in case by chance you know someone who has put together a sermon or a piece of music that deals with sustainability or climate change. It's not unusual that we in Utah are doing this with sermons. In fact, 8 or 9 other states throughout the United States have done this as well. And we did receive a grant which allows us to do awards, which is very nice. And in fact, those who submit, and Nancy, I don't know if you know this or not, you will receive an award. But basically, the sum of the money is going to be between $300 and $350. Now, we put a little restriction on this for those writing sermons because those people normally are staff somewhere. And what we've asked them to do is to take that $300 to $350 and do something at their place of worship, their faith community, that mitigates climate change. And then let us know what it is. And we'll be sharing all this information on the website as well as the sermons themselves. From our website, utahipl.org, you can get to the regeneration, the National Interfaith Power and Light, and you'll be able to see sermons from other parts of the country. And I know I've already seen some of these, and they're very good. And ours are quite good, too, I must admit. You know, the three that we showcased yesterday, we had applause at the end of the devotional, which I don't know if that's usual devotionals, but it's not usual devotionals that, you know, that I've been at before. But at any rate, it is worth it to go out to our website in the next couple of weeks. You have it on your information sheet. Remember, those films and books are available. It also is worth it to go out in a couple of weeks and take a look at some of these sermons and share them with people, and as we try and get more and more people motivated to do something about this very grave thing that we're facing.
And Steve, if people would like to see one of the submissions live,
yes,
this Sunday at 10 a.m. at First Unitarian Church, which is 569 South 1300 East, Bill McKibben, who is the author of Deep Economy and The End of Nature, and several other books and many pieces on the environment, will be speaking 10 a.m. at First Unitarian Church.
Great, 10 a.m.
And that will be submitted as our entry into the contest.
Right, and so Bill McKibben will join those from Utah that have written sermons, and we did receive one actually from Rhode Island, so from other parts of the country who have well, and also the musicians in terms of their compositions. I would mention, since you mentioned Bill McKibben, that his book Deep Economy is a very good one for those business-orientated or those that resist a little bit, because the book really spells out well in the early chapters the need and urgency in terms of our worldwide concerns. I do have a copy of it up here, and I'll just hold it up so you can see it. If you'd like to take a look at it afterwards, it's very much worth reading. Well, should we do the music selection? And it'll take us a moment or two to get set up with the keyboard, and it's called God's Stewards, so we hope you like it.
I'm going to say something while she's getting set up with the keyboard. Like me, Joan is a librarian, though she practices as a librarian and I don't. But I loved your comment about information, and if I have an addiction in life, it's to information. And the information that flows across the internet now and emails to me is amazing. And it's why I have a lot of hope and literally spend my energy doing this work, because I feel like never before in history have we had the information available to us to let us know what we need to do. Before, whenever there was a catastrophe, it just came and then we reacted to it, whether it was a war or lead poisoning or whatever the catastrophe was. So that, I find, is the most hopeful aspect of all of this. We know what needs to be done, and it is not just an issue of caring for our pocketbook, though I think that's a really strong one. But it really is a moral issue. And I think when people approach it that way, it's easier to make changes in your life. So with that, enjoy the music.
No. Unfortunately, we were hoping to present the words so that you could hear them, but we didn't because of the timing. In the last session, quite have time to get that in.
Oh, can we read the words first?
You could read the words first, that would be great.
I want you to read mine.
Yes, that would be great. So I guess you're part of that.
This is called God's Stewards. Can you hear me? Okay. We're God's stewards on earth. We will take a stand for clean air and water. We'll care for our land. Let's help with our climate and clean energy. We'll care for God's creatures and live sensibly. That's the chorus. And then the first stanza is, God of creation, of earth, sea, and sky, now we stand on holy ground and praise your name on high. You are Allah and Yahweh and Krishna, you're all, for your spirit lives within us when we answer your call. Second stanza, God of all nations, we're one family. Let us live upon this earth with love and harmony. We're God's light in the darkness, and when there is need, let us work to help our planet in each thought, word, and deed. And then it goes back to the chorus. I have the easy part. I just have to push my button. Everything's already been recorded on different tracks.
Ah, technology.
Yes.
That didn't sound like it.
Okay. You know, it's a rock, huh? No, that's not right either. Oh, this didn't happen before. Oh, I have to push it up. So let's try this one. This should do it.